Orale! Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is your host, Jorge Martin. Familia, it's the NFL Insider Series. You know what? We're down about like the final 10 right now, and it's just, it's been nothing short of awesome. You have all been watching so much and giving great feedback. Keep those comments coming and make sure that when you put those comments, also hit the like, also hit the subscribe button. I'm telling you, our numbers are growing and it's just been wonderful. It's just, this is really just the kickoff point so much for the redraft season. And it's time for, you know, you're going to get so much great content even after this. So promise you, Familia FFB on YouTube. Also make sure when you go to underdogfantasy.com, use that promo code Familia23. You're going to get matched up to the first $100. So best ball season, Familia, best ball drafts are happening all the way up to kickoff, you know, in September, that Thursday night with Chiefs Lions. Keep drafting. Might even win some money. So, Familia, our invitada, I swear, I mean, I was so happy that she said yes, to my invitation 2 years ago for the first time I did this, and just so happy that she keeps coming back. I mean, one of the preeminent voices when it comes to Houston Texans coverage, and she's on the Houston Chronicle. Somehow, she also is a lawyer, and that attorney life can be kind of busy. But hey, you know what? She gives that great analysis, and I just swear, and also Houston through and through, Texas through and through, mi amiga, Stephanie Stradley, the Houston Chronicle. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. So happy to have you back. And you know what? And you know, this third year in a row and third new regime in a row. Yes. but you have history. I remember in reading now, Familia. Make sure you go to her, go to Stephanie's pinned tweet on Twitter, because she has a great breakdown, a great season preview for the Houston Texans. And one of the things you mentioned was the fact that your first year covering them was also D'Amico Ryan's first year too, right?
Yes. The people who know D'Amico Ryan's and have seen him over the years, he's the guy that you follow. And it's because, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people compete, and the way that he competes is just so appealing broadly, because, you know, he's been there, he's earned things, and he's just been very good for Houston. Like, I gotta tell you that I am so pro D'Amico, it inspired me to actually make a t-shirt.
D'Amico.
I think the biggest thing is, you know, the last couple of years have been difficult, just because if you want people to believe in your program, you want people to think that your program's serious, you have to conduct yourself at the highest level in serious ways and in football, broadly appealing football ways. And D'Amico Ryan's is that guy. I mean, he says the right things. He knows what to keep in house and what to say publicly. And he does the right things. Like, the first thing that he said when he was introduced was he needed to get his staff. And he knows better than anyone how important it is to get the staff on both sides of the ball. Because, you know, like the piece that I have pinned, it's for a broad audience. It's for Houston Texans fans. Like, what's going on? You know, like, if you haven't been paying attention to this TV show, okay, what's the recap? So the recap is for fans, but it's also for fantasy people. It's like, you know, for a while, the only reason why the Texans might have been relevant from a fantasy standpoint is, you know, Damian Pierce was just motoring his way through an offense that maybe wasn't very reliable in a passing game, for example. Or, you know, the Texans were relevant because their defense was so bad. You know, maybe you start guys against the Texans defense.
I did that a lot. I did that a lot.
So, like, you know, if like, oh, I don't have the right guys for this week. Okay, who can I pick up on waivers who's facing the Houston Texans? Like, that's the embarrassing way for your fantasy football to be. But, like, the way that D'Amico Ryan's put the staff is, you know, in some ways, a version of what the 49ers have done, but also it's a callback to the Houston Texans of 2006. Like on that staff, Kyle Shanahan was the wide receivers coach. And here's just a little story. I've told it before. That season, they were really trying, you know, they were kind of sideways with fans because people were sick of their quarterback option. They went with Mario Williams as their first pick, which was disappointing to some who wanted them to either go Reggie Bush or Vince Young. So they had a challenge to win over the fan base. And the way that they tried to was to really reach out on the football issues and kind of show what they were going to try to do. And so Gary Kubiak was Mike Shanahan's right-hand man for any number of years and had run that offense and was a quarterback himself, a quarterback in Houston. It's funny to hear all the people of his age who say that they tackled Gary Kubiak when he was a quarterback. But in any event, that first season, like Kyle Shanahan was a baby then. He's like, well, what can Kyle Shanahan tell Andre Johnson? Like, I have to say, I went into that season very skeptical about him as a part of the staff. And they had a coaching clinic that they had opened to people other than coaches. So it was like a bunch of high school coaches and me. And I go in and I'm like, I want to see this Kyle Shanahan guy. Like, what's up with this? And he walked in the room and I'm like, I have shorts older than you. I mean, it's just very rude assumptions on my part. And then he started talking and he started showing cut-ups from the Broncos of, this is what we want to do. Here's the details of why this play works and this play doesn't work. You know, this, you know, and then he was talking about how, like, the details of wide receiver can extend careers, you know, help. And he was showing this. And, you know, he was a wide receiver at the University of Texas, and he got that way mostly because he had to use every bit of his physical ability because he wasn't naturally as talented as some other people. And his point of view was, you know, if you become a great blocker, a great route runner and all that, if you have physical gifts like an Andre Johnson, you can extend your career because you can get separation with the way that you do all the detailed things of wide receivers. So it's very detailed. And so within like 1 minute, I forgot how old he was, what his background was, who he worked with, any of that. It was just like, okay, we're talking ball. So that's just appealing. It's appealing when you have a coaching staff that treats professionals like professionals and says, okay, our expectations are high. You know, if we're looking at the league as a whole, it is younger than it ever has been for starting players. So the pressure is on teams to develop quickly. And, you know, and so they put together a very robust staff. The staff that was, you know, like the last couple of years is kind of hard to kind of judge because there were a lot of good people, but the entirety didn't really necessarily work together and the direction didn't work together. Under O'Brien's years, the staff was very, very lean and maybe not as NFL experienced as it could be. This staff, you know, they put all of the current staff in front of the media, I think it was the second day of OTAs after practice. And we got to just talk to them about ball. And you can see how they put this staff together. There's very experienced people. There are young people who had played in the league and are really sharp communicators and have been in different situations. Overall, you can have really good position coaches, but if they're not all on the same page with the schemes that you're running, it's kind of like too many cooks.
Yep.
Throughout this staff, you can go, okay, you got this guy from the 49ers, and this is the rest of their staff, and these are the people that they're trying to develop, and these are this is the roster that they're putting together. And you're like, okay, a lot of this thing, this is making sense. So the first part of the piece that I wrote, it, is really, okay, do you have all the pieces and parts? And the most important piece and part is the head coach. Because if you don't have a head coach that people believe in and believe that they support them and are going to get all the right pieces in place and put their ego sides. Like, is it going to be just your friends being the coaches? Well, you know, yeah, like I get why staffs have people that they've worked before, because, you know, that's a shorthand and they know what that person's right. capabilities are. But they didn't just get people that they already knew. They got people that were connected. And, you know, the hope is they can bring everybody together as a team, because that is not something that has been felt in a long time, where, you know, and this is kind of out of pocket, and everybody has their own opinions on things. But I was talking to somebody in the league, and I'm like, okay, what is your perception of the Texans' reputation? And they're like, they don't support their people very well. And that's not what they want. Obviously, that's not what they want, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if there's a perception out there that they don't support their people very well, then you need to get somebody who does that. And I can see that as a perception, because they just fired two coaches in a row. And part, there's a lot of finger point of why did this and such. And I can tell you, over the last couple of years, I'm sick of the gossip aspects of things. I get why it was there, because people didn't understand what was going on. And when there's that kind of chaos where people inside the building and outside the building aren't on the same page, people can't be their best selves. And that is really, in some ways, one of the themes of this year, is when people talk about the expectations for a CJ Stroud or a Will Anderson, players drafted very high and lots of eyeballs on him, and they're asking D'Amico Ryans, what is it your expectations for them? He said, I just need them to be their best selves. And how do you do that? Well, first of all, is support. You know, you have to have good development, and they have to learn a lot of things quickly. And you have to have a scheme that puts players in the best positions to succeed. And, you know, the 49ers haven't gone, you know, all the way to what they want. But really, if you can get to the playoffs, you can get on a roll. Like, that is really the situation. And frankly, the AFC South is there for the taking. You know, Jaguars have had a head start on their rebuild because they got their head coach earlier. You know, but
yes,
there's a lot of advantages with the way that the Texans roster is and situation is right now. Like, they've gotten some good core players in. They have some solid players in the building who have some experience. And then next year, they're also going to have, you know, draft picks and cap money. And, you know, even though that they traded away a first round pick from next year, they still have another first round pick. It's like, what an abundance. So this is a big, long introduction to, I'm very, like, this is how I started my piece. I'm unreservedly excited and enthusiastic about watching the television program, which is the Houston Texans, because, you know, like we talked about last time in cooking, you need all the ingredients. Like, can you win without all the ingredients? Sure you can, but it's just harder. People can be their best selves if they have the support that they need to do the things that they want to do collectively. And collectively, everybody should be looking for everybody to be their best selves and having that gossip aside, because people can't be their best selves when they're dealing with issues that are not football issues. You know, right. Like, one of the primary thoughts with any kind of football thing is you want to get rid of unnecessary distractions. And, you know, it's hard not to follow what D'Amico Ryans is doing, because if you can get a very explosive offense in place, and you can have a better defense than average and one of the better defenses in the league in a time where defensive rules are not very favorable to them, like, if that is value added, like, that is a competitive advantage if you can play actual defense in the year 2023?
Well, I think first we're going to start on the offense, and you got the new young quarterback, CJ Stroud, number two pick in the draft. Honestly, that game he had in the college football semifinals was one of the best games I've seen it. To me, that, you know, I go back to Deshaun Watson carving up Alabama.
We just refer to him as number four right now.
Oh, number four. Sorry. Well, when number four was at Clemson. So I always look at those kind of players who, when they do well against future NFL players.
Yeah.
Now, see, the track record for rookie quarterbacks is not the best, but I think you saw some traits in the balls that he was throwing. What were some of the things that you liked that could portend future success? Maybe not this year, or maybe some inconsistency.
You know, I don't want to be limiting as to what can or can't happen, because there have been rookies, particularly in the modern era, who have flashed right away. And they've already been kind of building different things into their systems. Like, they didn't change their GM and change their head coach at the same time. They have some of their staff coming back. What I will say is I have seen a number of quarterbacks come into the building and we're like, you know, we got this free agent, we got this. And sometimes early, like, you know, OTAs, you can't really see a ton. They're not wearing pads, you know, a lot of that. But I can say this, at this point in the off season, he looked good. I would say he looked, by my eyes, better than number four's rookie year. Like, number four's rookie year, I was like, you know, I'm waiting to see something. I'm waiting to see something. And then it turned out that what he could do the best is the off schedule stuff. Like, you know, the offense that they were running was not the easiest offense for quarterbacks and wide receivers. You know, that New England offense is a challenge for people not named Tom Brady. You know, just to be fair to number four in that. So, like, basically number four was, hey, the play's breaking down, I'm going to do hero ball. And, you know, being able to do things off schedule is a valuable tool, but it wasn't something that you would see necessarily in training camp very well, because nobody's supposed to hit the quarterback. You're supposed to get rid of the ball quickly, you know, like, you're not trying to extend the plays too much, because really you're trying to get your mental clock to get rid of the ball quickly. So those skills were really not seen that much in training camp. This offseason, and I know it's so small, it has been the most encouraging thing that I have seen since the Kubiak era, which, that, you know, whatever you thought about him as an offensive coordinator, his offenses looked professional. It was a very crisp camp, very efficient, where there's not a lot of standing around by the quarterbacks. One of the things I mentioned in the piece is the Andre Johnson standard for practice was, if the ball is catchable, you have to catch it. And if you're doing drills against air where there's no defensive back there, you cannot be dropping catchable balls. Like, you can't, and that, you know, they kept on trying back then to draft all these number twos to be across from Andre Johnson and value picks and all that, but then they couldn't catch the ball in training camp, and then they weren't catching the ball in games, and then they were sat. And that's why they had to go for a first round pick in DeAndre Hopkins eventually. And then the 2013 season was an absolute nightmare in ways that I have preferred to pour bleach in my brain. But but what I'm saying is, it's very crisp. There are less drops of balls that you would not expect to be dropped. There's a lot of practice with purpose. you know, they don't always win because, you know, there's a defense on the other side that is also working on their own things. But it's been delightful. Now, the way that they have OTAs set up and mini camps is a lot of times you're seeing two quarterbacks at a time throw the ball on both sides of the field. You know, just normal drill right. stuff. And so they're just kind of switching, like kind of rotating out. So you can see them kind of side by side. And the quarterbacks that they have right now is Case Keenum, who was drafted by the Houston Texans out of the University of Houston, very productive college quarterback, showed some things his rookie year that kept him on the squad, even though he didn't have like the measurables that you would want physically, typically from your quarterback. I mean, he did remarkable things as somebody who was an inexperienced quarterback and is still in the league. So he comes back to town. And as I said in my piece, he knows where the light switches are. He knows this offense. He's a leader and he uses every bit of his athletic ability to perform because, you know, you can talk process all you want, but if the ball doesn't go for a touchdown, then you didn't do your job. Like,
right.
Boy, I am getting real bright here. This it's going to be 100 degrees. So, and then they have Davis Mills, who I felt bad for Davis Mills not really being in an ideal situation.
Yeah.
He's been on the team for a couple of years. He's a very promising guy coming out of high school. He's one of those COVID casualties from college where he didn't get to really play the way that he wanted to play because it disrupted a lot of people's lives. And the offenses that, you know, he was playing in, you know, last year, there were a lot of good coaches on the offensive side of the ball, but the stew was not something that I don't think it put players in the best situations to succeed. Now, I'm very excited with what this offense is because, I mean, we had Purdy starting a playoff last year as, you know, given his background, which is a really hard thing to do. This is a very quarterback-friendly offense. And for Texan fans out there who are familiar with the Kubiak version, the way that they've discussed it this year, because I asked, you know, is this the same offense or what's different? He goes, yeah, a lot of the same concepts are the same concepts that we have seen here. And, you know, they were mentioning, you know, players back in the day looking at cut-ups from the Houston Texans of how the Houston Texans did certain things. However, you know, defenses have changed and offenses change with that. And so, yeah, there's some wrinkles that are specific to modern football that we should be seeing this year, assuming that, you know, the development happens and the players can get to the point that they are. But I'm curious to see what Davis Mills can do in a quarterback-friendly offense and being in the league for a little bit longer where he's in a difficult situation with maybe not as full of support as he should have. And then CJ Stroud, like when you see him compared to the other quarterbacks, it just looks effortless. He throws a very catchable ball. Mm-hmm. It's clear that his teammates are responding to him. He's publicly saying the things that he should be saying. He's working with wide receivers in the off season, which is what the best quarterbacks do. Cause he himself is not in the most ideal situation. Like, you know, Patrick Mahomes, you know, he sat, but he was sitting in a situation where there was already an established quarterback in that situation, an established head coach and coordinator. There were some established players around him, and then he was stepping in with his natural ability. So that's an easier situation. But whoever was going to step into the situation as a rookie quarterback for the Houston Texans in 2023, he has a challenge, but it sounds like he's up for the challenge. And we'll have to see in training camp because, you know, this staff is going to make everybody earn it because, frankly, Houston is a little damaged on the quarterback position. There is not a jersey that has been worth purchasing as a Houston football fan at the quarterback position since Warren Moon. Okay. So, you know, people in Houston paid for years to watch David Carr's development, and all of his teammates had to endure some very rough quarterback play. But, you know, coordinators can be difference makers. You know, Kubiak's first year with Carr improved him. Then they got rid of him because they saw what they could see, despite he still having years left on his contract. They brought in somebody else. They brought in competition for the quarterback position. And the sacks went down by half, by just another year and a different quarterback. So there's that damage, but then there's also the damage of, you know, playing quarterback position is hard, and you need actual support. You need, and not just like magical thinking that if I work hard enough, things will work. Mm-hmm. You need actual support, a scheme that is a proven scheme that a variety of quarterbacks have succeeded in, or at least thrived in. Because as I understand it from talking to various quarterbacks over many years about this type of offense, there is always a place for the ball to go. It isn't intended to go to one guy or the other, but if you are somebody who is above and beyond the rest of your teammates, yeah, you're going to get thrown into, you know, they'll throw into double teams if you're good enough to deal with the double teams. But ideally, the way the offense is supposed to work is all the skill positions should be targets because they want to put pressure on defenses. That you can't just ignore the fullback. You can't ignore the running back. You can't ignore the tight end. The tight end is not just a skinny offensive lineman that, you know, there was a time that the Texans had like three tight ends that had tons of receptions. Now that was partially because their wide receiver core was struggling, but everybody who's a skill position should be a receiving target.
Right.
And, you know, there's always should be a place for the ball to go, but you know, it's once you learn the offense, now that's going to be, I think Stroud's hardest challenge is, you know, just A, basic rookie stuff, B, coming into a situation where everybody's learning a new offense, and then C, you know, you have these long play calls. So you just, you know, it's a big challenge, but it sounds like he's up to the challenge. And though a lot of Texan fans know this, the quarterback coach is Gerard Johnson, former quarterback. He's been a few places, really good communicator. And he is one of the people that saw C.J. Stroud at a very young age and had mentored him some and had worked with him some. So if we're talking about any team in the league who should have known Stroud better than anybody, it should be the Houston Texans because their quarterback coach had worked with him before.
So yeah, that was good smokescreen to hide that fact because
I don't think it was. No, I don't think it was hidden. I just think they were trying to keep things pretty quiet. Like I had heard some things because just people tell me stuff.
Right.
I had heard some things. And people were like, oh, well, they're into this guy or that guy or this guy. And I'm like, I'm just telling you, you should be open to the possibilities because they are open to the possibilities. And they are going to trust their evals. And as I understand it, their evals were there are less than 10 elite prospects in this draft. They had lots of ammunition. There's only so many young players that they want to incorporate on a team at any one time because it's really hard for young players to lead young players. And so they're like, hey, if we think these guys are the best offensive and defensive player in the draft, you know, you don't just hoard ammo. Sometimes you use it. And, you know, if you trust your evals, you know, use your ammo. And it really didn't hurt them that bad because they have ammo next year. And I mean, I think some of the considerations by people as well, you know, there's some really great quarterbacks in next year's draft and you might miss out on those guys. But, you know, as I learned many times, tomorrow is not guaranteed for the players that you project or that your ability to get those players or like, you know, at some point, to the people inside and outside the building, you have to show that you're serious about football because people have their own opinions on football. And if you're not showing that you're serious football team, then you're irrelevant. And one component of a serious football team, other than having a legitimate head coach, is option at quarterback. And he's an option at quarterback. And I don't have a problem with them taking a big swing to see what they have in him, but also knowing that, you know, he's being pressed because Davis Mills is in a new scheme and is a hard worker and keeps his mind about him and was also a promising player. And Case Keenum, you know, he knows how to deal.
No. Yeah, he's the veteran. The veteran presence.
But nobody's like, oh, the future of the Houston Texans is Case Keenum holding down the fort. But, you know,
as far as
I guaranteed, there's many possibilities. But I have to say, you know, there had been some reports coming out of OTAs and minicamps of, wow, CJ Stroud's, you know, I like the way he throws the ball. I like how he competes. You know, I like what I'm seeing. And sometimes you hear those reports, and I don't want to name names because it gets kind of mean where somebody's like, this quarterback looks great. And you're like, what? How can you be so tall and getting your ball batted down every time? No names. Anyway, I'm just saying, everybody has their own views of things. And my view of things is, at least at this point in time, I like what I see, like in a way that is remarkable to me. And I want to be relieving to other people, you know, because this looks like NFL football. Looks like NFL football.
That's, for the first time in a while for you. Well, let's run over to the running backs real quick.
Yeah.
So Dameon Pierce was one of the players that I remember asking you about, and you said that he had a shot. So 939 yards last year. So they didn't add anyone in the draft, but they did add Devin Singletary. Obviously at OTAs and minicamp, running backs it's all because of the passing, like you mentioned in the article. But going into the season, does it look like Pierce is still kind of like the front runner?
I will say, you know, this offense is very running back friendly.
Yeah. Like
when we started talking to Dameon and Devin about, hey, you know, lots of people put up some yards in this offense and, you know, both running and receiving, talk about eyes lighting up. I mean, you know, they're like, yeah, we've been watching cut-ups of what we're, you know, what our responsibilities are. And yeah, this is great. I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, from a fantasy perspective, which I get that there's people out there that care about it. From a fantasy perspective, I don't know how much committee there's going to be because, you know, Dameon Pierce didn't finish the season because he got hurt.
Right.
Part of that is a lot of his running was very physical. Like he was making a lot of his own yards. And even though they didn't draft running back, they brought other guys in to compete. And one of the people that they brought in is Xavien Valladay. You know, like early OTAs, mini camps, it's hard to say a lot about the players because they don't have pads on and, you know, the kind of physical running that, let's say, a Dameon Pierce does isn't happening. Like they're trying to protect each other in camp. But I think that there's opportunities. And I think the key thing for fantasy people is A, watch who stays healthy, because camp is hot and it can be really hard just from soft tissue, like to keep hydrated enough that you're not having hamstrings, things like that. So that's the first thing. Both Damian Pierce and Devin Singletary are not the biggest guys. You know, there have been successful guys, not the biggest guys, that have run in this offense. Right. And, you know, Damian Pierce is not that small. I mean, he's listed as 5'11". I'm not sure that's right. But I mean, we'll see how they move guys around. Like a key thing, I'm just mentioning the size part of it, is this offense wants your running backs to be able to pass protect. And the coordinators that come through this system do not want guys on the field unless they are convinced that they are going to protect the quarterback. And then I guess that's especially important when, you know, you're trying to develop a quarterback. But I think that they are going to run a lot because, ideally the game script is they're going to pass on first down in the first half of games. They're going to put a lot of aggression. They're going to really wear on defenses, make them really defend, try to put up points early. And then second half, they just keep running it. They just keep running it. And, you know, that's when the offensive linemen are real happy to just keep on letting it go. Now, that's hard to do, you know, dealing with holds.
Right.
Sometimes can mess with the running game. But, I mean, ideally that and D'Amico Ryans has made it really clear, like he wants the defense to get the ball back. That's get the ball back. Mm-hmm. Either you're going to do takeaways or you're going to stuff them on third down. So that's the intention. Like I think, especially if you're trying to protect a young quarterback, you're not going to try to put them in too many bad situations. And the best way to not do that is to have a credible running game. And this scheme is intended to have credible runners. And the only reason I mentioned Valaday is like, why did they make him a priority to pick up? And, you know, if you look at his background, he's not as heavy as the other guys, a little bigger. He's fast. I want to say he's one of the faster people in the combine. And, you know, sometimes you can get some value guys, you know, at the end of the draft or undrafted, because the modern NFL doesn't value running backs as much as they used to. And, you know, Arian Foster was an undrafted free agent. And, you know, sometimes if you put guys that have good qualities in a running back friendly system, they can shine. So, like, I would just say, keep your ears open. Maybe there's one guy that, like Damian last year, one guy, he pretty much demanded the rock until, you know, he got injured and didn't finish. But, you know, just keep your ears open to like you staying healthy, all the little things. You know, the coaches will start talking about all the little things that they're looking for, and what they're really doing is telling everybody, hey, you can't just run, you know, like it's not just one cut and run, which is what, you know, like they don't want any negative yards. They just want to keep putting pressure. But I think the key thing is they need to do everything if they're going to be on the field and get as many touches as they want to get.
Yeah, it's going to have to be that. This season, I could still see, I love this offense. And the other thing about you mentioned about this offense, that they do like, the 49ers in the past, it's even with Christian McCaffrey, other running backs are getting involved in that. So it looks like, I mean, both of them are going to contribute a lot during the season. So I think,
I would think, barring any kind of injury in training camp. Yeah. I think that's going to be the way to go, because they've been on the field before.
Yeah. Total. And it's a total meritocracy. I remember Elijah Mitchell undrafted like sixth or seventh round pick, ending up getting the starting job over Trey Sermon 2 years ago. So who was a second round pick. So they're it's all about earning it. So the wide receivers.
That's up in the air.
No pun intended. You know, you got Nico Collins, got Robert Woods, the Wiley, the veteran. You've got John Metchie coming back from not only a torn ACL, but also leukemia. You know,
Noah Brown was actually offered in front of the media to talk for a little bit, which is, you know, they've been putting the Jets in front of the media the most, just, you know, but I mean, he's a player who was by his own admission fairly raw coming into the NFL and has shown mm-hmm. some things and wants to earn it. Like, it is a very hungry group. It's really hard to tell on the outside, especially this early, who's going to be the guy. And I'm not sure that's going to be obvious early, especially we don't know who the starting quarterback is. DJ Stroud, maybe.
Though is Woods being kind of like that veteran presence? Because me being a Ram fan, that was one of the things that he was like,
oh,
yeah.
Like, no, and in some ways, I hope, particularly in training camp, that the fans get to see more of the players and just hear them. Like, there's a bunch of incredible players that are hungry and are competing what D'Amico Ryans would say the right way. And, you know, if we're being very real, you know, you got 90 plus guys competing for not that many spots and, you know, young guys and vets, and they know what the odds are, right? I've talked to players in the past, like, well, what do you think of this new guy? Are you going to mentor it? And they're, you know, they talk on the side, like, really, this guy's trying to take my job. And that's a hard dynamic for some teams. And this is a team that says, okay, we're competing against ourselves. We are trying to be our best selves. And we're trying to get our teammates to be better because we have a 17 game season and hopefully more than that. And we're going to need everybody to be contributors. And there is a kind of a discussion, like in the NFL generally, of like, what teams are best? Is it the teams that have a few stars and a bunch of people at the end of the roster? Or is it the teams that have above average players and solid guys all around? Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have different philosophies on that. I mean, ultimately, I think that the best approach is you keep on drafting the best players you get, and then you make a situation that is attractive for people to come in and compete and know that they can compete fairly.
Right.
That it's not just like, oh, well, you're the veteran, so you're inked in, or, you know, you're the rookie, so, you know, like, no, D'Amico Ryans was a rookie. He was called Cap before he even finished his first training camp. And it was obvious that he was the guy because he, you know, he wasn't just him for himself. He did the work. He knew his assignments. He practiced the way he played. And this team in particular does not seem to be afraid of competing, like in a real way. Like, you know, like sometimes in recent years, it seemed like they were trying to hide things from the media to protect the players some from, like, you know, the media saying, oh, this guy dropped this ball and whatever. And at some point, it's not going to be very long before they're playing in front of millions of people. So, like, you know, people like me looking at them catching balls, like, that shouldn't be a big deal. That shouldn't be any kind of pressure because these players, you know, one of the things that was so exciting to hear D'Amico Ryans come out of his mouth is we are treating people as individuals and as men, and we are going to put them in the best positions to succeed. And we have high expectations for, like, I mean, those are, you know, everybody says that kind of stuff, but sometimes you don't treat people like they're men. You know, right. You're coddling them or you're like trying, like, no, like, yeah, we expect for you to compete in a way that helps team goals. And if you're not that guy, you know, then you're not going to succeed here, because this is the expectations and this is how I did things. And, you know, it's doable because we've seen it. We've seen those teams. So I like, you know, I know that this sounds kind of weird, but there was a time where the way the team wanted players to present to the world was a little robotic, you know, like, I won't say it was completely New England, you know, but, you know, I just want to be the best teammate I can be kind of thing. And it almost became a joke in 2014, you know, like not being able to like fully be themselves. And what's nice is this year in particular, when we have the opportunity to talk to these guys, yeah, are they on team messages? Yeah. Being team guys, being a part of the collective, not making it about any one individual, but they're also being their full selves and not having to pretend that they're less than they are. Like, there was nothing worse than I saw in 2014 of JJ Watt following the media directive to, you know, I'm, you know, yes, I'm, you know, being the best teammate I can be. I'm like, you're being less than who you fully are. And the best years of connections between the team and the fans were when people could connect to people as human beings and individuals. And I don't want to put it like blame. Like, people have different orientations and different approaches to things. I just really enjoy kind of the Texas friendly way of saying, you know what, you're an adult, I'm an adult, I'm going to talk to you like an adult does. I'm not going to like hide stuff from you that doesn't need to be hidden. I'm not going to ask people to be less of themselves or to hide their joy, or like let people be fully themselves within the construct of the team. And really, that's about keeping it about ball and don't do things that are distraction. Really, you know, be your best self. Don't be a distraction. Like, make it about football. Like, that's very simple. But if you look around the league about times that teams have had difficulties, and this is not just a Texans thing, this is just like when there's distractions, either in-house or off the field, or when there's people making people feel bad for no good reason, that's just, it's just separating. And, you know, yesterday in Houston, we celebrated something that became more of a thing. It didn't used to be, but it's kind of a joke. It was 713 day, July 13th. Oh, yeah. 713 is our area code. And one of the things that is kind of a very Houston thing is just a generosity of spirit. And that if you look in the middle of the word Houston, it is us. It's all of us. It's not us versus them. It's us. It's us. And the more us feelings that you have, like the most us feeling that you ever will experience is during a championship. Like, I saw the Rockets' first championships, very us moment. Everybody was friends with everybody. Astros championship. Everybody was friends with everybody, and the differences between us fall away when it's just celebrating something that we wanted to see all together and not separating people or, you know, pushing people aside. It's just beautiful. So I'm very like, yeah, that's just kind of a very sentimental view of, I am so happy I wrote what I wrote, because there have been people so hungry to find football that makes sense to them. You know, everybody has their own football preferences and
preferences.
This kind of football makes sense. It makes sense. Like, are there different ways that you could organize things to make sense? Yeah. But this way in particular makes sense. I love it.
Oh, awesome. Well, what, two last questions on the offense. Yeah. John Metchie, I think he was dealing with a little injury, but...
You know, we don't really know the John Metchie stuff. Like, I think that they have a number of guys in camp that are going to be really competing at kind of slot position guys. Mm-hmm. Like Tank Dell was drafted this year from the University of Houston. And I think... I mean, all the reports are that Metchie is on track. You know, obviously, you know, leukemia diagnosis, you know, that makes kind of returning back into, you know, NFL practice a little harder. But like, you know, mentally, if there's a guy that can do it, it's him. You know, like he's just a very tough individual. But at the same time, you know, they can't just ink him in because he's never played at the highest level. And so you don't know how somebody's going to be until they're put in the position. So they, like the wide receiver group is a competition, wide competition. And whoever performs, you know, in practice. And, you know, what's great this year is they're actually facing other teams in practices. Like, you know, like they don't have as many preseason games. And you can see a certain number of things from teammates practicing against each other, but sometimes it's good to bring other teams into the mix. And so they're doing that against two teams this year. Like they're not afraid of competing. They're not afraid of finding out who they are. And we're going to find out a lot of that stuff. Now that doesn't create a lot of certainty for the fantasy football community. And I'm just saying, you know, just keep listening,
right?
Keep listening. You know, like Xavier Hutchinson is one of those players, you know, he's drafted this year that people have been, And why is that? Well, you know, he had a couple flashy catches in practice where you're like, okay, like the kind of draft they did this year for wide receivers and some of the free agents that they brought in is they were targeting guys that have been very, very productive. Tank Dell, very productive wide receiver. Xavier Hutchinson, very productive wide receiver. So like they didn't get like these developmental guys like, hey, this guy ran a 40 fast in one in a straight line. These are wide receivers first. And then the question is, okay, can you develop them fast enough in your scheme to show their talents? And, but like, there were plenty of kind of like, oh, I'm looking at this, like, Nico Collins.
Right.
Like, you know, there were a number of times last year is like, I'm really enjoying what he can do in the end zone. Because especially for, you know, just generally in the NFL, I have figured that a lot of times young quarterbacks very much enjoy tall targets. You know, easy to see targets.
Yep.
And in this particular offense, you know, you've seen tight ends who are on the smaller side of tight ends be, you know, Hall of Famers in this offense. And then you've seen big wide receivers do some mischief with people because A, they can block. So they're opening up holes for the running game. And B, they're just big targets that, you know, with the chaos that a rookie is seeing, is like, okay, I'm gonna put it in the end zone where just this tall guy can get it. Good luck, you know, 5'10" defensive battle. This is a bad matchup for you. And this offense is supposed to go, okay, where is our matchup? Who is it that we're gonna embarrass this week? And if you're running it the correct way, you can embarrass defenses. That's why, you know, defensive coordinators, they are in rough shape these days because the rules are all supposed to be favoring the offense. And so like you see all the defensive coordinators playing musical chairs because it's really hard to maintain defense at a high level over time.
One last one, Dalton Schultz, you mentioned he might be very important in this offense this year.
Yeah. I mean, he, first of all, good head on his shoulders. He's been a productive player for Dallas. He's on a one-year deal. He came to the Texans because this is a very friendly to tight end offense, as I was mentioning earlier. So if you are a tight end that can catch the ball and has good hands and, you know, has been productive, if you stay healthy, you're going to be a target. You're just going to be a target. That's, I mean, I would be surprised if he isn't. And the only way that it wouldn't be to me would be is if he got hurt. And really, you know, they have some nice guys behind him, but nobody where I go, oh, this guy has to get the ball. You know, so if you were to pick a guy early from this squad where it's like, you know, I could see him doing well because tight ends do well in this scheme. Mm-hmm. And he has done well as a tight end, as an individual, then it's just a question of like, okay, do you trust what the Texans are doing at the quarterback position to get him the ball? But even then, a lot of offenses that struggle rely on the tight end a lot because, you know, everything's crashing down. Who has the matchup against the linebackers, the tight end?
Right. Okay. In about 30 seconds, we've gone really, really in depth, really in depth. But the offensive line, what's kind of state of the offensive line? It seemed like it was trending in the right direction last year.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly put a lot of resources in it. Having a better scheme is always helpful for the offensive line. If the quarterback play is good, that's good for the offensive line. They have invested a lot of money at the tackle positions. More uncertainty is in, you know, center guard. They drafted a center this year. It's really hard to get a good feel for, you know, what their progress is going to be. You know, when people are playing patty cake in OTAs and mini camps, like that's an understatement. But you know, OTAs mini camps are really working on technique, and this scheme really needs all five offensive linemen being just kind of like a hand where mm-hmm. you look like you're running, you look like you're going to be running the ball every time, but defenses can't guess. And the harder part about it is you're not necessarily blocking a player, you're blocking a space and you're handing guys off and you're working as a group. So the first question is, how fast do they get chemistry together? Because it's easier when there's been five guys working together for a while. But they have some very physically talented players. And you know, they have an experienced offensive line coach. He hasn't really been coaching so much in this scheme, but at some point, you know, blocking is blocking. So it'll be interesting to see how fast they get their chemistry together. Is the middle of the line more cemented? And is it just, if you get a scheme that it's a proven scheme, that the install makes sense with the whole rest of the team, it puts them just in a better position just generally. And then the biggest question mark with them is, you know, can the quarterback put them in good position? And I would say that the biggest question mark is center guard. Okay.
Yeah,
that one. So that was more than 30 seconds.
on the defensive
just
side.
Very enthusiastic about this team.
Hey, you know what?
I get to talk about football. I get to yes. talk about football.
I love it. Yeah. Oh gosh. One last thing about the defense. Last year they were really, really easy to run against. And D'Amico Ryans and you mentioned that D'Amico Ryans has talked about how he wants to improve the defense. The 49ers were one of the best run defenses last year.
Yes.
But obviously it's not just scheme, but it's going to be personnel. Is it have they made the upgrades to make that better this year?
I think part of it is twofold. First of all, hello, Will Anderson.
Yes.
Hello, Will Anderson. Like, you know, you can be arrogant and say, hey, we're going to just get the guys and we're going to coach them up. And you better be really good to be able to do that. Like, you know, there's a lot of failed careers going, oh yeah, we'll just get any slappies in here and we're just going to coach them up. Really? You know, the best players want you to have the best players. Like, you want good teammates around you. So picking Will Anderson high is just like, okay, we're serious. if you look at the Texans defensive line, they have a mix of young guys and very experienced guys, because, you know, defensive line is grown man stuff. You know, there can be some very promising players in college, but on the next level, they're facing, you know, every week you're facing the best guy, not, you know, just sometimes, but they have a mix of guys. If you look at their sizes, they're not that different than what the 49ers ran. D'Amico Ryan's scheme is really very linebacker focused compared to some other places. Like, they, the way that they want things to work is they need their defensive tackles to keep their linebackers clean. So they're occupying, they're trying to make it really hard for the running back to find those lanes. And the linebackers are going to be clean, so you're not having to rely on your safeties so much to stop the run, which happened way too often last year. But the linebackers need to know their assignments, and D'Amico Ryans coaches that with detail. And then if you can keep your linebackers clean and keep your safeties back, where you don't need to have your safeties in on stopping the run, that's the ideal. That's the ideal. And then a lot of it's going to be just disguising what they do pre-snap, where it's not going to be really obvious, you know, what they're going to be doing. And then there's a lot of guys that are promising guys who have physical traits that maybe if they're put in a better scheme or just have more experience, they're going to be better in year two. And then they have incredible players, you know, physical players that they have drafted that may not have shown everything the last couple of years, but showed some promise. Like Stingley, for example.
Yes.
Was drafted high last year. He is somebody who could play in any number of defenses, but it's kind of a waste. It's like, okay, you're always going to be in zone. Like that's an overstatement of what was last year. But I think generally you're added more talent, you have some solid vets. And I think the thing that's exciting about D'Amico Ryans is at least he has shown some ability to elevate his squad collectively beyond individual talent, because, you know, the 49ers at times were losing key guys and they were still performing at a high level. So I can see why a lot of the players are very excited about what they might be able to do in defense. Now, I didn't write a ton on this because it's OTAs and mini camps, you know, just not pads. So it's just kind of patty cake football, but a lot of it is just the install, making sure that people are in the right places to make plays and really team play and get it to the point where they aren't having to think so much. They're aggressively moving the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like great defensive football. I have seen great defensive football. And, you know, D'Amico Ryans at moments was a part of that great defensive football I watched. I mean, it is, the Texans are so overdue to have the kind of dominant team that the Astros, Astros have been not having the best time lately, but I mean, it's been strange as a longtime Houstonian watching a team that isn't the scrappy underdog that is just meant to, it's like, oh, it's a big moment. Okay, well, we're going to just hit a grand slam and, you know, like, what? You know, am I going to say that 2023 is, you know, Houston Texans, you know, no, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is you can see an alternative, like there's lots of alternative futures for all of us. You can see an alternative future for what they have in place now of, if they develop it the way that they're trying to, could be dominant, because as I mentioned in my piece, there's been so many years where the offense has been good and the defense has been bottom third. Or vice versa, or both are bottom third. And that is such a stress on a football loving people. Like last year made me sad, you know, like there's different ways that people can be fans. And I was going trying, you know, trying to be supportive, but like, it just hurt my heart to see people, these players have very limited careers and they deserve to have all the things in place to put them in a position to succeed. And so it's hard to like really like these players, but go, are you, you know, is it good that you're in Houston, Texas? And now I'm saying, yeah, people should feel good to be in Houston, Texas. And it's going to take some time for people to fully see what they're putting together. But I hope that people get to see it because they have a lot of solid guys in there. They have a lot of solid position coaches. And those who, you know, vouch for D'Amico Ryans do it for a reason. Like there have been so many great competitors who have come through the Texans building, but the commonalities of a lot of them are the things that D'Amico Ryans exemplifies. And this is fun to watch. This is fun to watch. And I hope that everybody else gets to see that, like that it shows up on the field because, you know, best made plans and all that. But when you have, you know, if you have all the ingredients in place to cook something good, the likelihood it's going to be pretty good unless you like screwed up and grab the cinnamon instead of the cayenne.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, since we're in on the subject of spice,
Yes. You know,
we've talked about, you've given me some of the best Mexican food takes the past couple of years. Any recent discoveries, any recent favorites or, oldies that you keep going back to?
I was just thinking about it the other day. Like I really don't like to say the best in Houston because a lot of it is like the best is like what's in front of me or what's in proximity because Houston's big. Like, you know, sometimes the longest drives of your life will be on one side of town the other. So a lot of times it's like what's close to you. And but like what's beautiful about here is you can have so many types of Mexican foods from various different areas. But my favorite thing from a Tex-Mex perspective is I finished a big project. I'm like, I'm starving. I haven't eaten. And I show up somewhere and it's like, oh, I should just get the Comida Deluxe. And just about every place when they have their combo plates have the Comida Deluxe and you get to have a little bit of everything. So I was eating by myself and I had the tamale. I had everything.
Oh,
I ate all of it. It was glorious. And I'm like, how wonderful it is that there are a million places, you know, 10 minutes from my house that I could get a Comida Deluxe that would blow other people's brains out. Like if they were in other parts of the world, like you have your one good restaurant. No, we have all of them. We have like not just Mexican food. We have all of the good restaurants, like whatever you're in the mood for. What is best is whatever you're in the mood for, you can get in a 10 minute drive. Or get it delivered or whatever. I mean, it's
fantastic.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Like that's, you know, there's a lot of things that are wonderful about Houston and why I've called it home for so many years, but it starts with the people and sharing food with good people is one of the best things.
Oh, well, sharing time with you has always been un gran placer, a great pleasure. Feel free, plug anything you got. Yeah, anything you got, or just just
sure. Well, at Steph Stradley is my Twitter, as it shows here. I have as my pinned tweet the training camp preview, and really, it's I saw mini camp, I saw OTAs. Everybody has their own view of things. It's just another person's view as somebody who talks to a lot of people, sees things in a certain way. And I don't like overhype. So like if I'm enthusiastic about something, this is real. It's awakened something I haven't felt in a long time. Like a football thing's like, really? This is beautiful. So I want people to read it, not so much because like this is the view. It's more of a way of thinking about things and a way of starting a dialogue about things where people aren't like, well, this is wrong and this is wrong. It's like, okay, well, this is what's right. This is what's right. This is what's good. And we can't fully judge it yet because it's so early. But you have those things in place that good teams have. So I have that there. I put things on Twitter. Training camp starts in a couple weeks. So I will put their things up there on occasion. But really, you know, the biggest thing that I'm pushing is I want people to feel relief that D'Amico Ryans is leading this team in the way that football teams should be led. And I hope that people can support them in whatever way they like to support, whether sure. it's commentary like you guys are doing, or being there in person, or any number of ways that we can support each other and make it enjoyable for everybody to watch the football, because that's why we're talking.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, I can't thank you enough. Always so much fun catching up with you. So
well, thank you.
And for me, that you still got a few more episodes of the NFL Insider Series. Going to mix in some other fantasy analysts, kind of a couple other interviews in here, kind of getting you ready for the NFL season also. So make sure you're setting those notifications up for Familia FFB on YouTube. Get that like, hit that subscriber button. You know what? Again, our numbers have doubled just from this series. So in the last month. So keep them going. And also make sure, again, if you're going to underdogfantasy.com, use the promo code FAMILIA23. Going to get matched up to the first $100. I'm Jorge Martin. You can find me on Twitter at Jorge Martin17. Everywhere else, it's Familia FFB. You can, and FamiliaFFB.com. I will have some content here and there before get you ready for the season. Again, one more time to Stephanie. Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias to all of you for joining us. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud.